Welcome home. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. If you are out on YouTube, you're supposed to subscribe, click here, find me, do all those things the real estate people do. And speaking of real estate, you have some real estate on your radio dial. Just set a spot for us. We're going to be bringing it pretty hard and fast here once Oriole season begins. Lots of things going on. We're going down to Florida. The Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation, our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare, as well as Liberty Pure Solutions. It's coming back, I swear. Like, I'm working on this documentary that Greg Landry is doing on 25 years of WNST. Lucas and I are running amok in Southwest Florida. Naples. I've always wanted to go to Naples. Oh, not that Naples. The other Naples. And Fort Myers, of course, and Sarasota. And MIC, see you soon. Luke Jones joins us now. Justin Matabike has a deal. The Orioles are still getting sold, I swear. Everybody tells me this. I see David Rubenstein point toward the new day of Oriole baseball. But, man, blink. On a weekend, and it snows, and then it's going to be 70 degrees. Dude, it's March. Like, they're not playing games, but all sorts of weird stuff's happening. And I think the Matabike deal is not stunning, but a little bit like, wow, okay. I mean, you sort of think when you can't get to the finish line at the beginning of the week, by the end of the week, feels like the Ravens blinked, huh?
No question about it. I think when the tag was announced 3 hours prior to the deadline, I think there's an assumption that you're not terribly close to having a deal. And I think that's where most people assume where the Ravens were with Justin Matabike. And from his perspective, if what the Ravens were offering wasn't appealing enough for you to say yes prior to the tag deadline, what's going to change in the matter of 9 days, and really less than that in terms of the tampering window, you know, the negotiating window opening this week. So I think there was an assumption that, not that they couldn't get a deal done at some point this offseason, but I don't think anyone assumed it was going to be imminent. So when I look at it through that lens, understanding where the Ravens were from a salary cap perspective, knowing that they, with that tag number, were $10, $11 million over the cap, somewhere in that neighborhood, you kind of assume the Ravens improved their offer, knowing that, hey, we're going to have to create space somehow, whether it's restructuring Lamar Jackson's deal, restructuring Mark Andrews' deal, restructuring Marcus Williams' deal. You look at the biggest deals that they have on their payroll, so to speak, and guys that have years left that you want to keep. You know, you're not going to extend or do a simple restructure on Ronnie Stanley, for example. So I think you were looking at those guys, and then whatever potential cuts that they still might make at some point here as the new league year opens up. But to me, I think it's safe to assume that the Ravens improve their offer enough for Justin Matabike to say, you know what, I like it here, but you're also giving me close to nine figures, you know, a $98 million contract over 4 years, which I told you over and over, he was going to get close to $100 million on the open market. And I think that played out pretty accurately, considering then what Kansas City gave Chris Jones later in the weekend, which blew that out of the water. So I think this is the kind of deal that is exciting, certainly for Justin Matabike. It's exciting for the Ravens, assuming what we saw from him in 2023 is a sign of more to come. And that doesn't mean he has to be better moving forward, but it means this is what the expectation is going to be for him. And I went back and looked at it even before they made the deal, Nestor. Over the last five NFL seasons, there have been a total of 15 years from interior defensive linemen to post double-digit sacks. Now, Aaron Donald, more than one of those. Cam Hayward of the Steelers, more than one of those. And Chris Jones of Kansas City, who, of course, got his monster deal later in the weekend, the other one. So the point is, and we've talked about this a lot, interior pass rushers are unicorns. You'll see a guy maybe do that at one point in his career, but very few of them sustain it. So,
well, look at what we've had here. We've had 30 years of football here, right? And we've had really good, I mean, we've had Sam Adams, we've had Elodie Nada, we had Goose for, you know, and Goose is a good player, but Goose has a legend that supersedes his football. It's sort of like Rick Dempsey, you know what I mean? Like, sort of good player, great player, you know, good player, but but not a Hall of Fame player, but a solid player. But not Sam Adams, and certainly not Haloti Ngata, and certainly not this kid. And when you say unicorn and you compare him to these, I mean, one of those guys is a Hall of Famer. Maybe all three of them are Hall of Famers. It just depends, right? Like interior linemen, it takes a little while. We had John Randall on, pissed off. We don't want to piss John Randall off at 7 in the morning. You and I found that out, I think, on Radio Row a few years ago. By the way, there's a great NFL Films piece on John Randall's history that I got a gander at the other day, because I like football, Luke. Contrary to popular opinion, I've studied this stuff. But this is, to me, you know, I think of where I've been when they've made big decisions. Example, I was in the FedEx Field press box in the middle of the season on a Sunday night game when they walked in and said they gave Chris McAllister whatever it was, 28 million, whatever absurd number it was 20 years ago, right? Where they ink a player and you're like, they're marrying that one, huh? Really? And then they don't marry. Go through the list, dude, right? I mean, all these developmental, all these third, fourth round picks they've had for 30 years are all names like Ed Hartwell and Dwayne Starks. And just go through the list of all these players that won other somewhere else that they didn't really get married, right? And when marriage is $98 million at this point, right? And when you've already got a quarterback that's taken up 20% of your cap, one of the two of us was a little upset when Roquan Smith came in, and that was a marriage moment. Like, boom, trial by fire, week 12 of the football season, boom, we're giving him, you know, more money, and Patrick Queen's going to get his feelings hurt, and we know that. And they know all of this. But marrying the player, and this is something you and I, if we burn the tape from last week on Wednesday, Thursday, where we got together and talked about Bradish's arm, which if he makes 18 starts, we'll definitely have to burn that tape. That'll be the worst segment we've done all year, right? But in the case of Matabike, when the deadline passed, I think the assumption of veteran guys like you and me is, oh, it's an Adelis Thomas. It's a Matt Judon. It's you know, we love you. We're going to pay you $21 million. We love you. But the cap thing changes all of this, right? Like, the real math of this is it's not a flat world one way or another. And whether they like him, love him, they better love him, right? I mean, they better really think he's Aaron Donald the next 3 years, right? Or like that. And this is a different kid than the kid they drafted to some degree, right? Like, this kid has moved into their hearts and into their wallets in a different way than maybe we thought a week ago. Given their cap and given everything they are, this is a really complex signing, but one way or another. They might win three Super Bowls the next couple of years, right? Or maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd put them in the same category as some of the guys you mentioned that they ultimately didn't sign. I think if you look at the Ravens historically, they've used the franchise tag as buying time to get a long-term deal. I mean, I think they've used the franchise tag 9 times in the history of the franchise, and they've signed 7 of those guys long-term eventually. I mean, the only ones who didn't get a long-term deal were Wally Williams way back when and Matthew Judon a few years ago. So I would disagree in the sense of putting him in that through that, looking at him through that lens. But I think for me, I look at this and, you know, we'll hear from Eric DaCosta about this at some point. I don't know if he'll say much of substance. I don't know if Matabike will say much of substance as the negotiator.
I'm just done with DaCosta. Waiting on these guys to give stories that don't really always provide color unless it's on the lounge or something. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to believe is what I'm saying. And I'm sitting here even in my mind saying, well, I know they love him. They gave him a lot of money. I mean, they clearly love him.
Sure. Well, I mean, they wouldn't have tagged him if they didn't love him. I mean, you're talking about a $22 million tag number in a year where they didn't have a whole lot of salary cap space at that point in time. So
you can love a player for a year, but not a lifetime, too.
Sure.
You can say,
sure.
Yeah, right.
No, no question. But okay. I guess I'm disagreeing with your assumption that just because they tagged him and didn't sign him outright to begin with meant they didn't love him. No, I think negotiations take time. Lamar Jackson was as good of an example as you'll find in terms of negotiating, taking
time. Well, he had to love them too, right? He could have said, no, dude, I'll play for 21. Next year I'll go, you know, like he could have done that route, right?
Well,
they really had to wow him.
It was 32. He would have been crazy to play 32. That was a major undervalue. Anyway, I don't want to talk about
No,
Lamar
not
Jackson's
Lamar.
contract.
No, I was talking
Oh,
about
Madubuike?
Madubuike.
Well,
I'm talking
although
about
we.
Madubuike could have just played on the tag and the, but they needed to make it really sweet for him, I guess was the point, right?
Sure.
And
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly. And again, when we did our previous segment on this late last week, the assumption was, especially because the Ravens didn't even wait until that 4 o'clock deadline, they announced it shortly, right around 1 o'clock. So they announced it 3 hours prior to needing to announce it, so to speak. To me, that was a sign that they weren't terribly close. You know, typically, if you're really close on the day, on deadline day, you're going to keep working and you're going to try to see if you can strike a deal at 350. And you announce it right then, and then you're not even talking about the salary cap. Or, you know, and I had a few people ask me over the weekend, what does this mean for the franchise tag in terms of, you know, the salary cap, in terms of can you use it on another player? The franchise tag's dead now. You know, the deadline was last week. Madubuike had the franchise tag, albeit unsigned. And now that he signed a long-term deal, the franchise tag just goes away this year. And the Ravens weren't going to use it on anyone else. I mean, you know, it's
it's
expensive. You
expensive.
know, it's not something, you know, it's something that's prohibitive on the salary cap unless you're talking about a position, you know, like kicker, for example, where, you know, it's not a dramatically high number. So this franchise tag is dead for the Ravens for this offseason, but they got Madubuike signed long term. But yeah, to go back to your point, I think to me, what was more likely, the Ravens markedly increasing their offer compared to where they were a week ago, or really just 3 or 4 days earlier than that, or Madubuike changing his stance, even though he is about to see what Chris Jones is going to get, about to see what some other guys on the open market is going to get. No, the more likely scenario was the Ravens, knowing they had to create some cap space anyway, looked at Madubuike and said, you know what, how
It's
can we
now or
sweeten the pot
never,
here
to
to
some
try to
degree,
get some?
right?
Well, I
Because
mean, it's
once they
not now.
start cutting other things, then they're not going to go back to him in June and give him money, I don't think.
No, I disagree with that. I mean, they, you know, they have until July to get a long-term deal done. But the point was, if you didn't get it done last Tuesday, if he said no to you, what's changing after you give him the tag in a matter of 3 days, unless you bump your offer significantly? And what it was for the Ravens at that point, because they were, what, $11 or $12 million over the cap once they gave him the tag. At that point in time, they're saying, all right, we need to create cap space somehow. Now, we can do a simple restructure with Lamar. We can do that with Andrews. We can do that with Marcus Williams, for example. We can cut Tyus Bowser, you know, go down the list
Or
of
we
all
can
the
give
different.
Madubuike too much money and love him up and bring him in
Or
here.
we can give him money, and yeah, we're going to be making a bet here that his career year was the start of great things that will continue. And that, not that he has to be better than he was in 23, but they want to see a guy that's more like the player he was in 23 than the player he was in 21 and 22, which was good player, but not special player.
The
So,
data
but
paid him to be a game changer for, like, not for a year, but for,
yeah.
like, we better not be talking about him the way we talk about Ronnie Stanley and Marlon Humphrey 2 years in March. I mean, seriously.
Well, I'm not putting Mar. I think putting Marlon Humphrey in the same category as Ronnie Stanley is unfair, but
No, I
Ronnie
think for
Stanley got hurt.
future
Oh,
production.
sure. Well, that's, I mean,
No,
that's a piece for
I'm just
anyone.
saying,
Yeah.
like, are
Yeah.
they
I
going to
mean,
play like the most expensive guy on your team? That's it. Like, that's
you can
it.
say that about anyone, though. I mean, that's how this works, you know? I mean, it's all about trying to look at what a player has been and trying to project what he's going to be moving forward. And I think a big part of this, Nestor, is the salary cap itself. I mean, the salary cap's $255 million this year. I mean, we just talked about a $30 million jump, roughly. And when you consider they're finally kind of out from the you know, the cap restrictions that we saw in the pandemic year, with revenue being depressed the way it was at that point in time, they're out from under that. The TV deals become more and more lucrative and will continue to become more lucrative, I assume. So part of this is also, okay, it feels like a lot of money right now, but then Chris Jones gets his deal a day later, and you'll see players A, B, and C, and X, Y, and Z get their deals in free agency, and you're going to see these numbers continue to go up. And then at that point in time, in the same way that Lamar Jackson's deal looks better now than it did a year ago because of where the salary cap, in the same way that Mark Andrews' deal looks a better than it looks better than it did a year ago because of the salary cap increase. You know, the point that, or the bet that Eric DaCosta is making is, one, Matt Ibike will continue to be an elite pass rusher, and two, the salary cap's going to continue to go up anyway. So those dollars that look as lucrative as they look right now, relative to the cap, won't be quite as lucrative. In the same way that 13 years ago, the Ravens gave Haloti Ngata a 5-year, $61 million contract, which looks like chump change now in terms of money for an elite player in 2024. But relative to the cap, it was a very high percentage, in the same way that Matt Ibike, yeah, it's going to be a bigger part of their cap savings, but, or a bit bigger part of their cap in general, but they needed savings. So again, it's a matter of, to me, they looked at this and said, we're making a calculated bet here that he's going to, one, continue to be the player that he is, and two, the prices for interior pass rushers, which, if you look at the money that Aaron Donald got from the Rams a few years back, and understanding he's older, but, you know, a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, like you said, if you look at the money that the Chiefs just gave Chris Jones, who is a few years, you know, he's 4 years older than Matt Ibike, they're paying those guys kind of like their edge rushers when you look at their compensation. You know, they're kind of in their own group. So Matt Ibike is not in his own group in that same way, but in terms of everyone else, he's at the top now. So
I know the way Kyle Hamilton is going to be in his own group when he negotiates,
yeah,
right?
Well, and part of this is these contracts kind of cycle in and out, right? I mean, to your point, when Kyle Hamilton's up for an extension as early as the end of next year, next offseason, he would be eligible. It's after your third year. They're not going to be paying Ronnie Stanley at that point in time. When Tyler Linderbaum's up for an extension, you know, at some point, you know, over the next couple years, probably Marlon Humphrey at that point won't be playing on a big number. So they'll probably have a new corner that they're paying at that point in time. So you know, you kind of look at your the number of deals you have, you know, you look at your elite players that you're trying to pay, and, you know, you kind of manage and you go off of that. And then in the meantime, you're trying to find value guys elsewhere. And I think that's going to continue to be a big part of what they try to do in free agency. I mean, yeah, I think they'd love to re-sign a Jadeveon Clowney, you know, as it pertains to their group of free agents not named Matt Ibike. But, you know, the numbers got to make sense for them, you know, especially considering where they are with their overall cap picture. And not just that, but where they're going over the next 3-4 years. So this is the big ticket item. You know, this is the monster deal that they did not want to see Matt Ibike hit the market. That's why they used the tag to begin with. And that's why at this point, knowing that they were going to need space, and by the way, let's be clear, still moves to come to create some more space. I mean, with Matt Ibike's number, which is right around, I believe it's $12.25 million on the cap this year. Now, obviously, the cash he's making is way higher than that, but on the cap, it's 12.25. So they shaved about $10 million off of that number. It gets them right around even with the cap. So they're still going to have to restructure Lamar's deal. And when I say restructure, I don't mean something that's going to compromise them big time in the future. It's more so simple restructures where you take what his base salary is, you turn that into a bonus. Yeah, you do increase his numbers in the future a little bit here and there, but it creates cap space for you this year. Those deals are made. They structure those deals when they sign them with the idea in mind that you're going to adjust those numbers over the course of time, because you're always going to need cap space because you don't know what's going to come up. Players get hurt. You want to sign guys during the season. Certainly you want to be in a position where you can make a free agent move or two, you know, even if it's not going to be a lucrative one. So they're still going to have to do some of that, but getting
life is different. Life is different now after Lamar. This is sure.
Well, and it's not even so much this year, because Lamar's cap number this year, and that's before they do any restructuring, is 32.4. But that deal's on the books. You know that those numbers will increase. You know that it's going to be more challenging. And look, the same thing applies when you sign Roquan Smith, when you sign Justin Matabike, when you've been dealing with the Ronnie Stanley contract, when you've been dealing with the Marlon Humphrey
Or when
contract.
Hamilton or Linderbaum come up and these other players come along, and where's Andrews after this? And, you know, the money he's earning. Like, and then you give Beckham a bunch of money last year because you got Lamar sort of done to some degree. And that was sort of, you know, I don't say wasted money, but sort of big one ticket, one item money, 1 year money that they won't have anymore. Right. They won't be able to add that kind of player. And that's we live with that with Flacco. We remember 15, 16, 17. We don't want to remember it, you know, especially when Flacco gets hurt. We don't want to remember Bolden leaving. You don't want to remember any of that. But this is the week for that. And Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. If there's anything else you want to add to Matt Abike, please throw it in. But I guess the other part of this is you and I be back on the horn again here a little later on in the week, checking off the boxes of where all the former Ravens are going, because tis the season. And as much as they brought the U-Haul into the back of the building out there and took his whole defensive crew, here's where the players are going to get nitpicked. And I think, from what I've seen from the pundits and everywhere, the Ravens are expected to get, you know, come after more than any other team. It'll be headlines of how many guys former Ravens have signed elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I they're certainly going to be up there. I mean, they had 20-plus free agents going into the start of free agency. Now, some of those guys are Dalvin Cook and Josh Johnson and guys of that nature. You know, Daryl Worley, who, by the way, Daryl Worley, someone that I could see them re-signing, you know, because they're going to need a third safety, because I assume Geno Stone's probably going to land somewhere else. Although I'll throw out, there are a lot of safeties on the open market. So that can obviously impact the money you get.
This is where we go back to what we said a minute ago. They're going to need cheap help.
Sure. I mean, you always, and look, even last year when they were in this, a much more advantageous position from a salary cap standpoint, look at the value they got for Ronald Darby. Look at the value they got for Jadeveon Clowney. Look at the value they got for Kyle Van Noy and Arthur Millett, and go down the list.
They didn't get that from maybe Rocky Sin. They didn't get that from Bowser. They didn't get, you know.
I mean, you're never going to bat a thousand. Yeah. I mean, you're always going to have some value concerns. But for the most part, some of those more modest deals, and you know, put Bowser to the side because he's someone who was already under contract and was hurt and just didn't play all year. But of all those value veteran signings that they made, even throw in John Simpson, who, you know, was the weak link on their offensive line, but hey, he played more snaps and started more games on their O-line than anyone else on the team. Like, he was durable for them. There's value to that, even if you're not a great player. So that's going to be the challenge is going to be hitting on three or four or five veteran value signings like that again, and having some, you know, having success and getting surplus value. I mean, look at the surplus value they got for Clowney and Kyle Van Noy. I mean, that was absurd. I mean, you're talking about two of the best value signings in franchise history in terms of what they paid compared to the production they got for those guys.
That's how you win 13 games, bro.
Yeah,
right.
You're not going to do that every year, though. So, but that's the challenge. That's what you're trying to do. So, I think where the Ravens stand right now, and sticking to the defense, because you kind of look at most of their free agents, you're looking at Clowney, you're looking at Van Noy. Obviously, Patrick Queen's the big ticket guy that's still unsigned in terms of the Ravens free agents, that as someone's listening to our conversation, there may already be a deal for him to go to Seattle or somewhere like that in principle, because I think he's going to get, you know, he's going to get lucrative money. As I've been saying for a while, he's going to be getting somewhere in the neighborhood of probably $13, $14, $15 million a year. I mean, that's what I would think he's going to get. So, you know, yeah, you're going to have that attrition. You're going to experience that. But I'll say this, and I've even seen some pundits and people that I respect, people that I agree with on a lot of issues. I've seen some people kind of characterize this offseason for the Ravens in terms of being really critical or really tough that they're going to endure. I don't know if it's historic. You know, they've gone through this a lot. You know, I mean, you can think of post 2001, you can think of post Super Bowl 47. I think back to post 2014 when Haloti Ngata was gone and Torrey Smith was gone, and, you know, a few other guys that were.
They won Super Bowls after those, though. That's the kind of the harder part, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, that's right. I mean, but it's the name of the game. I mean, look at how many guys Buffalo just cut, and Buffalo's been in a similar position, not exactly the same, but a similar position to the Ravens in terms of they've been there in January, but they've come up short against number 15 and the Chiefs. They've come up short more times than the Ravens have in January against Kansas City. So it's tough, but yeah, I mean, this is part of the cost of doing business when you do have a franchise quarterback. And the Chiefs are going to be dealing with it as much as they're happy that they just re-signed Chris Jones, but what happens with L'Jarius Sneed and some of their other free agents and other moves they're going to have to make. So, I mean, this is how it works. NFL, not for long, right? I mean, roster turnover is a big part of it. And we'll see how this plays out. That's why as we've talked about over and over, that's why I haven't been someone that's jumping on the table about going out and giving real money to a veteran running back. Because frankly, I just think they have bigger fish to fry right now.
They don't have real money.
They need a running back at some. They need another running back. Let me be clear about that. But I don't know if it's up to me. And look, no one cares. And Eric DaCosta's not ringing my phone to see what Luke Jones thinks. But if it's up to me, I'm not sitting there saying I need to have a running back on day one of free agency. I see the surplus of supply that's out there on the open market of, okay, not just Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs and Tony Pollard and Derrick Henry, but some other guys that I think might be on the market for a while that you could even go through maybe the draft and see where you are draft-wise. And it's not a deep draft class for running backs, at least that's the perception. But post-draft, there's a chance there could still be some decent backs that are out there that you might be able to get for maybe not pennies on the dollar, but a 50-cent piece on
Well,
the
that's
dollar.
always the shopping price, right? It's you look at it now, as Ozzie would always say, we could play this week, but we don't have to. And if you don't have to play, then you don't worry about it. And we'll deal with that in the third round unless we don't. If we don't, there'll be something there because nobody else is signing these guys either because everybody has the same philosophy. And that's not something my buddy Chad Wiesling wants to hear representing Josh Jacobs. And I think Josh Jacobs would be a really nice piece here for this, for this team. I at what cost, to your point? At what cost, and who is the one? It's like an eBay auction, dude. Who's going to pay the most? Period.
And look, that's not to say that none of these guys are going to get money, but when you look at the Ravens, where they stand right now with their offensive line, I mean, right now, their starting guards are hitting the market. The assumption is there's a good chance at least one of Stanley or Morgan Moses could be gone, although that's not a guarantee. They're both under contract. But the point is, there's change coming to the offensive line. And I think they're absolutely going to try to upgrade some spots, or at the very least, in the case of, say, a Ronnie Stanley, maybe draft the heir apparent at the very least. And maybe that guy plays right tackle or plays left guard for a year. You go the JO route, so to speak. But the point is, yeah, we could talk about running back. And yeah, of course, they need another running back. Right now, Justice Hill and an injured rehabbing Keaton Mitchell are the two biggest running backs on their current roster, as far as guys that are under contract for 2024. So they need to add one, but is it going to be Derrick Henry? It depends on the number, I guess. If he really truly wants to be a Baltimore Raven and he's willing to take a little less, then okay, I could see that. But if it's what his market value is going to be or what some other teams are going to value him to be, then I'm a little more skeptical. But they've got offensive line, edge rusher. They've got to figure that out. I mean, that's a big question. Okay, if you re-sign Jadeveon Clowney, great. That position looks a lot better. But if you don't, and he goes and, he either waits it out or he goes and signs in Seattle because he loves Mike McDonald. I mean, I'm just spitballing different things that could happen.
Hey,
Then
Russell Wilson's going to Pittsburgh, right? Like, so anything's possible here this week. I mean, that's the thing. This is going to be a crazy week. We're going to be getting together on the internet all day long because this, who knows who's going where? I just know, and I keep going back to this, the Ravens are going to be a diminished team here in perception for a little while.
And look, I mean, that's kind of how the league is set up, right? I mean, in terms of the most successful teams as who have big ticket items on their roster, starting with a quarterback, you get to a point where, yeah, the rookie contract, Yeah, that's when you're living pretty, right? That's when your cap numbers are very favorable and you're getting all this crazy production. I mean, look at the value Lamar Jackson gave them in 19, 20, 21, you know, those seasons before, you know, the money starts to go up. I mean, MVP kind of production for a couple million dollars. I mean, that's where they were. You get to the point where you pay that quarterback and now it's different. Now you're one of those teams that is dealing with attrition. You're one of those teams that has more of a challenge from a cap standpoint. You're one of those teams that, oh, you're picking 30th or 31st or 32nd in the draft. You know, you're picking somewhere in the 20s. I mean, that's the league set up to be that way.
Well,
now,
and also when
talk
you
about
pick
parity.
down there, it better not be Perryman or your quarterback suffers. And
Right.
whatever they do with this left tackle thing at 30, if that's really what they're going to do at this point, because I mean, they live with Bryant McKinney for, you know, they have found veteran guys. And I mean, Lord knows they found Zeitler and he, I mean, they can find guys at a price. They found Matt Burke on the market years ago. Right. So, this is a challenging offseason for Eric DaCosta. And they're usually up for the challenge and they usually come back and win 11 or 12 games somehow, some way by hook or crook next year. And I don't think the Steelers are coming to get him with Russell Wilson, but time may tell there, right? If they were to get a ground game to some degree, change the way they're playing. Deshaun Watson. I mean, every Browns fan in the world thinks Joe Flacco is coming back. And I'd have no idea how that could possibly work, right? Like how that could possibly happen. And then the Bengals have a gimpy quarterback coming back from an injury. Who's great, and you know, I'll take him all day, Joe Burrow, but they have a lot to prove. So everybody's got a lot to prove here,
yeah.
But the Ravens are going to get, like, plucked this week. Like, literally, by the end of the week, you're going to feel as bad as you did when they lost the AFC Championship game, right? Because, like, the diminished part of what I talked about when I was at Coco's, and I'll little plug to Marcelli, get over to get some coconut shrimp because they're delicious. I mean, everybody brags about the crab cakes, but get the coconut shrimp. I remember being over there with you right before the Super Bowl, and it's like, you know, here we go. And, you know, McDonald had just gone out the side door, and we're still feeling bad about losing the game. I had David Katz on last week. He's still like, it was like 6 o'clock that day. He's mad again, just talking about it. We didn't run the ball, you know, like all that. And I'm like, well, you know, that's not what they're talking about in Owings Mills. They're talking about how are we getting guys under the cap? How are we going to keep these players? And who's going to be on our offensive line protecting our $50 million quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, and look, I would even venture to say that it won't be as raw, but in some ways it'll feel worse because then again, it brings up how favorable everything was just sitting there, right? Right? I mean, Kansas City
you're
was
not
going
to have Clowney. You're not going to have Beckham. You're not going to have Queen. You're not going to have Zeitler. I mean, boom, 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 boom. Like, all right, well, then maybe we're not a 13-win team.
Well,
you know,
13 wins isn't the requisite for winning the Super Bowl. It's getting into January and then winning games there. We've talked about that, and you know, not to rehash the specifics of the end of the 2023 season, but you know, maybe this era of the Ravens is destined to finally make its run when maybe they're an 11-win wild card. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, again, to the point, and I was even talking about this with my uncle over the weekend. Everyone wants to be the number one seed. Everyone wants to be the best team during the regular season because that's the competition, right? That's the competitive nature of any team. You want to be the best, but it comes down to being the best in January. And look, anything that's going to happen this week is probably not going to make people feel too good about that. I will say, though, that they did lock up Justin Madubuike. And again, that is such a rare piece to have for a defense. And I think as they endure the changes that they're enduring already with new defensive coordinator and new defensive line coach and new defensive backs coach, and obviously Zach Orr moves from inside linebacker, so you have a new inside linebackers coach. And now what we're going to see on the personnel side, where at least some of those guys we mentioned, you know, okay, maybe they can keep one. You know, maybe they get something done with Clowney, or maybe they get something done with Van Noy. Maybe you bring back a Ronald Darby is a depth piece, because I, you know, I don't think Darby's going to get big money on the open market. But the point is, to your point, yeah, Patrick Queen's going to go, and some other guys are going to be gone. You know, the young guys have to step up. And on paper, yeah, you go through some of that. But
Madubuike, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton—they have three elite players.
Yeah,
elite players.
Absolutely, and that's not even counting guys like, okay, if Marlon Humphrey's healthier this year, which, you know, he hasn't had these significant injuries all through his career. He's not Jimmy Smith in terms of injury prone, but if he comes back healthier and is more like the guy he was a couple years ago, then okay, you're feeling good about that position. So, I mean, look, I mean, that's every year this time, typically, because typically the Ravens have not been the team that's trying to win the offseason in the way that the Commanders have, for example,
down the road. The Browns win every April. Yeah.
Sure. This is the time of year right now, but now between now and the draft, when you don't feel quite as good about the Ravens usually, and we see how that plays out. Now,
to Jets your point, fans felt good for 6 months.
Yeah. But to your point, and you made mention of this, and it is very important now. It's so important for this team now. They've got to hit on their draft picks. And look, it's not easy when you're picking 30th. You know, it's a smaller margin for error when you're picking at the end of each round. And yeah, they do have a fourth round comp pick that they got for Ben Powers a year ago. But the point I was trying to make a year ago at this time, we were talking about, oh my gosh, they cut Calais Campbell. Like, that's not that Calais was Justin Madubuike, but he was good, right? Oh my gosh, they're losing Ben Powers. Who's going to replace him? Ben Powers finally just figured it out and looked like a good player. And now we're going to lose him. And what's going to happen with Lamar? And that's where I'll go back. And I even mentioned this in my 12 Ravens thoughts I wrote last week at BaltimorePositive.com, that for all of the headaches and perceived headaches, perceived frustration, perceived disappointment that they're going to endure in the coming days, you know, with presumably losing Patrick Queen or, you know, other guy, you know, Kevin Zeitler, Geno Stone, what happens with Clowney and Van Noy, go down the list. I'll still take any of that gladly over being in a position where your franchise quarterback is unsigned, unhappy, uncertain in terms of whether he's going to be with you long term. After the last couple years of what they went through on that front and the discourse and the fan frustration and guys like you and me talking about it every day, every week, I'll gladly take where they are right now than where they were the last couple years, where you don't know. And look, people can say what they want about Lamar or Josh Allen or any of these, you know, Joe Burrow, any of these guys that are chasing Mahomes as it pertains to rings, but I'll gladly take where the Ravens are right now than where the Steelers are right now, where, okay, maybe Russell Wilson will be better than Kenny Pickett, but do I think that Russell Wilson's going to have the Steelers playing deep into January? Heck no, not even close. So, you know, it still comes back to the quarterback and whether you have one and whether he signed long-term and whether he's happy and whether your direction is good. And look, frustration, I get it. They didn't get it done in the title game, but you know, if you're the kind of team that has a quarterback capable of getting you to that spot, I'll take my chances year after year and try to figure out the rest of the roster.
Luke Jones is on the Lamarathon bandwagon because there is no Lamarathon this offseason. There's just free agency and new ownership for the baseball team. We were talking a lot about that this week, getting some fresh stuff up the Baltimore Positive as well. Had a musician chat. I've done some community stuff. I had Bonnie Lorber-Habian on to talk about her TED Talk last week. Eric Edholm joined us to do a whole bunch of draft insider stuff. So we're going to have a great week around here. We're getting ready for the Crab Cake Tour. Luke and I are heading down to Florida next week for some spring training and some NFL owners meetings as well. There's a rumor Luke's going to have breakfast with John Harbaugh, and all the secrets will be shared, I'm sure, at that point. At least free agency will be over at that point. And, you know, there'll be some new sheriffs in town. There'll be some teams by the weekend to feel like they can, you know, win 9 or 10 games. In the meantime, the Maryland Lottery is going to send us out on the Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be at Coco's in early April. We're going to be at Costas in April. Also, each and every Friday, we're going to be at Fadley's Live when the Orioles are home from 2 until 5. So we're really looking forward to that. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery, Win Donation, Jiffy Lube, and Liberty Pure Solutions, putting that thing up and onward and onto the road. Luke's going to be around. You can find him at Baltimore Luke. And you can find me anywhere the good internet is served here this week. We're cooking up some great, great things for baseball season. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive, even though it might not be so positive for the Ravens this week.